Which one then?
Yeah.
Which one?
No, I just did it again.
Put the speakers on first. And then push record.
Yep. They're going up.
Yep.
Councilman Balk?
Present.
Gary?
Here.
Hanford?
Here.
Gamble?
Present.
Williams?
Here.
Steima?
Here.
Cutback?
Here.
Please join me for the pledge of allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, moving straight into the agenda this evening. This time is set aside for comments from citizens. This opportunity for citizens to speak to the City Council on any issues that would require that judicial matters subject to the public hearing. Welcome to address the council on any other subject. We'd ask that you limit your time to 5 minutes, and we also appreciate your name and address for the record. We do have one individual signed up so far this evening, and that's Crystal Shaver.
My name is Crystal Shaver. I live at 17133 100th Street Southeast. And it's not an issue, but it's really only about 5-10 minutes of a drive and a nice walk. You know, most of the things I've seen about this wakeboard park proposal is it's a boost to the economy. And from what I've seen is the economy situation is temporary. And as with all things that are temporary, they change. You know, people are already spending more. You know, it's Christmas time. Yes, people are spending more. But it's not going to change. People will continue to spend more. Bringing this wakeboarding park is just a small band-aid on the solution. It won't be this big end-all fix that a lot of the people that are for think it will be. It's just going to do more destruction and more devastation to the city than what's being put forth as good. I've been here every time trying to convince you guys of that. And all I can do is ask that you guys really think about your decision and hope that you do the best for this city.
Thank you. Okay, having nobody else signed up, still like to open the podium to any member of the audience who would like to address council. If you would like to do so, you may approach the podium and provide the name and address.
Good evening. My name is Patricia Lautenslager, 16886 Wales Street. And I've been out for a little while, but I'm back. And I wrote stuff down, but I cannot believe what I read in the newspaper today. This seems like a done deal, and as a citizen, I'm a little shocked. I saw the pamphlet today. That's all of my lake. That is all of my lake. I'm speechless, which, as an Irish girl, doesn't happen to me very often. But I've lived in Spokane. I've been to Manitou Park. I've been to Riverfront Park. These are destination parks. They're beautiful. Manitou's got the Japanese garden. They've got the Rose Garden. Riverfront Park used to be the train turnaround. It used to be pretty much of a mess. It's a beautiful place. None of them have private industry in them. Wenatchee has a river trail loop that's gorgeous that has slowly but surely made its way around, and it's made itself a destination point for people in Wenatchee. People in Wenatchee go. They park for free. They ride the trails, they kayak on the Columbia River. So I want to know where our destination park is, because I always thought it was Lake Tide. And if you put in these towers, you put in these cables, you bring these people to our tax-based park, there's no enjoyment left for the physical beauty that's there, to walk around, to fish, to kayak. I can't emphasize enough that will be turned over to H3O. I'm not sure where in the lake, where in this are allowed to go around the wake woods, I'm kayaking or I'm fishing, and they have however many people they have at one time on wake board wires, where are we on our beautiful Saturday afternoon with everybody in the park? You know, it's just, I just think private enterprise just changes that, and I can't believe that as part of the community for 19 years that I've come here to speak out and I read in the newspaper, it's going forward. We're just working out some deals with the environment, some lease things, and I don't know that if they take over 25% of that park, if I get 25% of my taxes back, because that's not the park I get to use, or that we don't give our parks department the opportunity to make it an even more beautiful place than it already is, because we're going to have noise and 2,500 square foot building and, you know, drop off points along a whole entire side of this lake. I can't believe that you would consider passing this, because it doesn't become my adventure land in Monroe. It becomes somebody else's adventure land, somebody that doesn't live here. And I just don't think, as a society, as a community, that's the way we need to go. I understand money. I understand it very well. I collect money from people all day long who don't have it, so I understand business. But parks, libraries, they're not about business. They're about people in your community that work hard to support it, that have a place to go that's respite. And that's what our parks are about. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Catherine Pearson. I live at 212-328 Street Southeast, Snohomish. And I have a statement I would like to read to council, if that's all right. I did question an attorney about the appropriateness of bringing a resolution forward tonight. I'd like to read the response, and I'd be happy to leave it with you as well. The city would have to undertake an environmental review that is consistent with the Washington State Environmental Policy Act, SEPA. This requires an environmental review in the case of any project, such as the Wake Ford Park that you described. Unless the review has already taken place, the city cannot proceed without undertaking such a review and determining that the city is in compliance with SEPA. One way to do this is to bring the matter to the attention of the city attorney, who is responsible to ensure that the city is in compliance with all the applicable regulations. You should find out who the city attorney is. In the case of your small city, it is either an employee of the city itself or it might be an outside law firm. Find out from the city attorney whether the SEPA review has taken place. It has to be an extensive environmental review of the project. You can find a state publication of a SEPA handbook that will explain the entire process and requirements, which are quite extensive. http://www.ecy.wa.gov/etc. The handbook explains SEPA environmental review is required for all agency actions unless specifically exempted by SEPA rules. WAC 197-11-800-880 or statute. Refer to section 2.3.3, category exemptions. Agency actions include providing funding or issuing permits for project proposals and the adoption of plans, regulations, or ordinances for non-project proposals. For the full definition of an action under SEPA, see WAC 197-11-004. The following steps are used to determine whether SEPA is required. Number one, define the total proposal, including any interdependent parties. Number two, identify all agency actions required for the proposal, for example, licenses, funding, etc. If there is no agency action, SEPA review is not required. Number three, determine whether the proposal or agency actions was categorically exempt. Some proposals may not require additional environmental review under SEPA if they qualify as a plan action under an ordinance adopted by the county or city planning under the Growth Management Act. I'm not quite sure what all this means. Hopefully you guys do know, right? Thank you. In any event, the mayor should be made aware of the need to comply to a SEPA review by the city attorney. This will certainly delay the project and slow down the mayor, who needs to be advised of state regulations that he must comply with in advocating the Wake Ford project, which may or may not ultimately get approved. The approval
to mitigate the impact of the project.
Mr. Mayor and Council, I apologize for my late arrival. I was not able to sign the book.
Please.
Thank you. My name is Chad Olson. I live at 18001 157th Place, Southeastern Monroe. First, I want to commend the Council for being open and willing to, and receptive to such an undertaking with the H3O project. I'm concerned on two fronts, though. First and foremost is the use of the south end of the lake, the pond, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of recreation I see, especially the annual fishing derby. I see a lot of people kayaking, a lot of people using the lake year-round. If the south end of the lake is going to be used for this wakeboard project, that's essentially going to be eliminated for that use. Secondly, I see this as kind of a venture capital organization, if you will, and I don't want to see the citizens of Monroe and the taxpayers of Monroe and the city of Monroe stuck with dismembering these towers that we've put in place should this venture fail. And I can't comment on the contract because I haven't really seen the contract, but I would like to ensure that the council and the taxpayers of Monroe are protected should something of that nature fail. I don't want to see everybody sitting in this room stuck with dismembering and disposing and putting this lake that we all enjoy now back to the way we see it today.
Mayor and Council, thank you for bringing the Cable Park proposal up tonight. The issue in front of us tonight is the presentation of a resolution. I wouldn't recommend action tonight, but for consideration by Council to review the deal points that H3O and the city have been able to develop in partnership for a proposed Cable Park on Lake Todd. I wanted to start off the presentation first and foremost by apologizing for the lack of information. This is a case where the grand conspiracy of not informing the public actually worked in reverse this time. I sent the document to the press and to several citizens to call, but I forgot to copy the council on the resolution. So my apologies there. We didn't get it up on the website Friday. Brand new website. We've got the holidays and so I will carry the burden of not informing you folks. Hopefully you all received it today via email. The proposal that's in front of you tonight is a resolution. Think of it as an interim step towards a lease agreement with H3O. As we work through the contract, the deal points seem to somewhat arrive pretty easily, where we kind of got bogged down. In fact, we got bogged down in the indemnification area where we have citizens that are using the park in general, not participating in the financial activity of the cable park, and the cable park operation happening at the same time. In the event that there's an accident, who covers the cost of the accident? Whose deep pocket does someone dig into? It's not an insurmountable problem, but the attorney for H3O and the city's attorney are working through that issue right now to create the correct language that should be inserted into the contract to protect both parties. And that's an issue that's going to have to be resolved as time goes along. The second issue that we're really not prepared to enter into a lease agreement yet is the legal description of the property that H3O would occupy or take possession of through the lease hasn't been defined yet. The city is going to have to go through and define legally through a survey and most likely a boundary line adjustment to create an envelope in which H3O will operate. That process has not been completed, and we will need to work through that process also. The resolution in front of you is in anticipation of a future lease agreement coming into play. Basically, what this agreement does is on the very back of it in Exhibit A, it lays out the basic deal points of the lease, the business components of it. And the resolution itself basically says the city will agree to work with H3O through their permitting process as they work through the city to permit the towers, the clubhouse, if you will, the docks, the infrastructure required for the park. Because the city owns the property and has not executed a lease to give H3O possession, the city would need to be a co-applicant in that situation because we own the only people that can ask for a permit are the people that own the property with the property owner's permission. In this case, the resolution would grant H3O that certainty that the city would work in parallel with them as they apply for the permit. It's anticipated the city wouldn't bear the costs of that permit operation. However, we would work in partnership with them and not obstruct that effort. This would provide H3O the certainty to go ahead and hire a surveyor to survey the lake, to define the area of operation. It would allow them to engage Parametrics, is the company they have looked at to do their SEPA analysis and to provide the SEPA checklist. Those two items are about a $75,000 bill to the applicant. So H3O is looking at some pretty significant dollars to plunk down. And what we're asking for council to consider is this resolution that gives them the certainty to move forward with financial aspects of their project. The document is in front of you. I can walk you through the deal points real briefly and then I'd be happy to answer any questions. The basic premise would be to occupy the southern portion of the lake. We've seen maps back and forth over the course of the discussion. In essence, the cables would occupy roughly 35% to 40% of the water mass, if you will. The swimming beach would be wide open for use. There would be the eastern shore would be accessible in its whole. There would be a swimming and boating corridor on the eastern shore that would be open. It's anticipated that the entire operation area of the cable park itself would be buoyed off in the water during the operation. The lease and the related agreements will be entered into between city and H3O or an affiliate. In this case, affiliate's probably a new entry into this. H3O is looking at possibly expanding and operating additional cable parks, and what they would like to do is form an individual LLC for each one. And what we've asked is that they include the name of Monroe, the city of Monroe, in the name of their parks so that we reap the rewards of the identity as they go out to advertise their cable park during their course of operation. The initial lease term will be 10 years with 3 5-year extensions. The city will have their right, special event rights on Lake Tai during the lease term. What we're looking at and is about 12 days of a year where the city can interrupt H3O's operation for such events as the triathlon, the Pro Mastercraft Series boats, or something else that might come up, fishing derby, anything that the city would like to partner in with someone else during those operations. It also anticipates us cooperating with them, so if we use the lake for half a day, they may start operation up, you know, that afternoon. They may offer their clubhouse as an accessory or an amenity to another event that might be taking place. So that's a cooperative area. Basic rent. This is just a minimum guaranteed rent payment every month. Would initially, year one, $12,000 or $1,000 a month. Year two, $1,500 a month. $18,000 a year, and in years 3 through 10, in anticipated through any extensions, $24,000 a year. In addition to that, and on top of that, they'll pay 2% of their gross profit, or excuse me, gross revenue to the city. That's going to be a fluctuating number. They've agreed to terms. I've worked with our finance director for the basic understanding of what information will be required to be presented to the city on a quarterly basis so that we have some understanding of their finances. Additional rent will include an offset, if you will. Initially, when we entered into the negotiation, there was a $100,000 number that was asked the city kick in as a capital improvement to the project. Through some discussions, the way we've presented this would be they would receive a credit against their 2% gross payment of 1% until $45,000 is credited back to H3O. In other words, they just won't pay $45,000 worth of rent as part of the city's contribution to their facility. It's anticipated that this would include, in concept anyway, the survey that the city would be providing, sewer hookups, water hookups, infrastructure that the city typically is geared up to provide at any rate. It's a negotiable item. It's something that we feel would be a good faith effort on the city's part to offer to H3O as part of the deal. The facilities plan would be jointly agreed upon by the parties prior to permit application and will include amenities to be built and improvements to be titled and remain with the city at the end of the lease. Approximately a 2,500 square foot building would be constructed at H3O's expense. So that's a facility that would be built with the city's input and be titled or deeded to the property, and should H3O default on the lease or complete their lease and after 25 years, that would become the city's building. And they have done some initial design work with a local contractor, Snohomish County contractor, looking at the structure of that building. H3O will comply with all regulatory permit and approval standards and procedures. We heard about SEPA tonight. SEPA checklist will be done. When it's a permit application, it's going to have an impact on a water body, and the state takes very seriously those types of applications. They will do a SEPA checklist, and it will go through the city, and the city's SEPA official will make a determination at the end of that. It could be one of three decisions. It could be a significant determination, in which case that starts a whole new process where an environmental impact study would be required. It could be a mitigated determination where there's significant issues that need to be addressed, but they can be mitigated. So typically that's a dollar figure that comes in. The applicant would have to achieve certain things to proceed forward with their permit application. Or there could be a DNS, not significant at all. And those are the three options that typically would come from the SEPA official. Risk allocation we addressed earlier. It's probably the crux of the contract, and it's for the citizens of Monroe, it's probably the most important thing that we assure that's well thought through and well vetted. And I think that process will continue, and I think we can come to a reasonable. It's not that we're at loggerheads, but there's a lot of language that needs to be written into that portion of the contract. So with that, those are the basic deal points. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Councilmember,
thank you. Jeff, thanks a lot for that. I'm just curious, and maybe this isn't a question for you. This is hypothetical, assuming this is already in place in the rent. Rent from something like this, is that something that we could put right back into the Parks Department, perhaps, or the Parks Capital Fund? And, I mean, the way I look at this, with all this rent, we could actually fund the unfunded portions of our parks plan that we have today. I mean, just in the first 10 years, it looks like about $222 in the first 10 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know, is there money generated from something like this? Can it be put?
It's general fund revenue, which means you can spend it on absolutely anything. It's city business.
I would certainly think, I know it's very premature, but if this was something to happen, I would love to see that money get put right back in parks and do some of the things that we wanted to do in other parks that we haven't been able to do.
If I may, it is general fund, but the
general
council
fund
has identified certain funds in the past, such as the stabilization fund and so forth, that monies are contributing to
new fund or something.
Yeah, the general fund can subsidize the capital funds. General fund can subsidize the operating funds.
So the council could create a fund specific to parks that the monies that are generated from a project such like this.
We have a parks capital improvement project fund, so yeah, the money could go there.
I'm a little premature about just thinking through that. My other question is, let's say you've gone through the first 10 years and then there's the first 5-year extension. Does the rent go back down to $12,000 that year, or do we stay at the $24,000 for the year before?
No, it would stay at the $24,000. And one other thing that I did want to clarify is that part of the lease agreement that we're negotiating behind this resolution is a bond that should the business fail, there would be sufficient funds should H3O not be able to recover the towers and remove the towers and the rest of their equipment. The bond could then be cashed by the city to pay for the removal of all those facilities. So I did want to add that in also.
Great. Appreciate that. And then also, I think there's certainly been some confusion as to the size. I know the diagrams you see in the paper, my understanding is that the beach area is absolutely not affected.
Correct.
Also, should this plan go into effect?
That's correct.
And sometimes it's hard to tell on the website or looking at the picture in the paper and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
I wanted to make sure that was.
And for January, it would be good for us to get you a real good, solid makeup. A larger picture that we can work with H3O to get that schematically laid out. They have been working with their tower manufacturer, SE Tech, to determine the exact location of the towers and the sizes of the towers. So that would be a good thing
That'd
for us.
That'd be very helpful.
Great.
I appreciate it.
And if I could respond to your first question about the Parks Capital Improvement Fund, I think council should seriously consider taking this lease revenue and parking it in the capital improvements fund for the parks. We're restricting the use of a park with this cable park scenario. And over a 25-year lease period, it's anticipated the lease will spin off about $1.4 million. And Mike might want to clarify, but I think we're about $2 million short in our 20-year park improvement plan right now. So that would go a good ways towards us funding, along with REIT and along with park mitigation fees, future park construction in the city.
Councilor Sam.
Thank you, Mayor. Jeff, a couple questions. You said that there's going to be a lease agreement or renewal bullet points with this when we get ready to actually vote on this in January.
This would be the resolution that you will look at in January. What this will allow us to do is to move forward. It'll give H3O the certainty to move forward with expending permit dollars to start putting together the pieces that we will need to generate the lease. Once we can get the deal points completely constrained within the lease, come to an agreement on indemnification, and to create a legal description for the property, then I think we'll bring the lease back to council for formal approval.
I guess my question is it seems very, I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying, as we finish this up, these 3 5-year extensions, are those mutually agreed upon? Can the city of Monroe walk after 10 years? Or not that we would necessarily want to, but just in case, you know, people say, hey, this is wonderful, or man, this is what would look best. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of like a contract. Do they exercise the option, or is it mutual?
Typically, they will exercise the option to move forward with the lease. The only way we could step into it would be if the HTRO was in default of the agreement. If they were in default, we would have the choice at that point to extend the lease for 5 more years or not.
As far as the default portion of the contract, I think it would be good for us to make sure that we tighten that up very closely, just not necessarily with HTRO, but just as a general policy. Because what I've noticed is sometimes these contracts tend to go on for a while. Somebody could be not pay their bill and be in default, and then say, well, I'll make it good at some point, or they come up with some legal reason why they shouldn't pay or something like that. And the day that thing's not here, someone's in default, that person. We need to make sure that we're not that they get to make it whole at some point, or they, you know, to try to get us to. I just want to make sure that we're...
The language in the contract, the draft agreement, is pretty clear on that issue. In fact, I'd say it's very clear.
It's always clear to the people who sign it, but the people that have it 10 years later, it's not always so clear. I'm not criticizing the owners. It seems as though people tend to get fuzzy when they start to think of what they should have and what they don't have and things like that. So I realize nobody can write a perfect contract no matter how much you study it. Now, this $45,000... So basically, let's just say for sake of numbers, they make $100,000 the first year, let's say gross revenue, okay? So $2,000 of that then would be ours, correct?
That's correct.
And then that would be deducted from the $45,000?
$1,000 of the $2,000 would be deducted from
the
$45,000.
And the $100,000 would come to us.
That's correct.
Okay, and the $45,000 we would basically... do they think that they'll spend that pretty much before they complete the project with hookup fees and everything else?
Well, they won't see any of that revenue until they start paying the 2% gross to us.
I guess what I'm saying is, okay.
They will pay the fees up front. They will pay for the water meter. They will pay to have the sewer installed. They will pay for all of that. They will just receive a future credit against those fees that they put into the ground.
Okay, but they will build it?
Yes.
All in the beginning?
Yes.
Because I just had a question about gifting the public funds and things like that. If you front somebody the money, if you will, and waive a fee, where that would have to come out of if we gave them $45,000.
Correct.
Okay. So really, it's not coming out of any particular fund. It's just that whatever we would make, we're not going to get necessarily.
It's a reduction in revenue to the city. That's correct.
But the rent would come in no matter what.
The minimum rent would come in no matter what.
That's not tied to the $45,000?
No.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. That's what I was reading, but I just wanted to make sure that we weren't having 2 years and nothing.
Correct.
And I wanted to make sure we weren't gifting public funds. That's one of my concerns there. Now, the building itself, tell me about the building. Basically, we own the land, they own the building once they build it. And so it's going to be 2,500 square feet. And if they walk, for whatever reason, have to walk away from it, it's our building at that point?
Just to be clear, they will build the building.
Right.
Upon occupancy, it will be deeded to the city.
Okay.
They will then, through the lease, have possession of the building as part of the lease agreement. So it will be the city's building.
So the maintenance of it then is ours?
No.
I just want to make sure something happens, something goes wrong, you know. Explain just for me the process of when we're reviewing our own documents, how that happens. In other words, the city has an interest in this particular piece of property. Do we bring in an independent third source, or do we do the reviews ourselves, or how does it work?
The lease has language built into it that they'll keep the facility in good working order. Now, the words are different inside the lease, but the lease requires them to maintain the building and keep it in a workable condition.
Just back it up a step before the building.
Okay.
Forget the building for right now. I mean, that's part of it. But the actual, the SEPA checklist and all of those things, is there any type of wall that has to be built up there as far as making sure that we're, not that we wouldn't be, but the perception would be that we would be diligent about making sure that we don't in any way perceive to have missed something in our willingness to, on the one end of the city, try to get something moving forward, but on the other hand, to their, do we have somebody that comes in? Do we have the folks from help you wherever they come in to help us maybe something like that, or how does that work?
Typically, city staff, the real estate side of the transaction and the permitting side of the transaction have to be separate.
Right.
That just needs to be, in our city staff is qualified and prepared to put through the permit process to code and to require H3O to comply with that code. So can the city interfere? I suppose in any organization there's a possibility of that happening. We have people in the city that aren't going to let that happen. So it's difficult when we are the landlord or the land seller. We've got multiple land transactions going on in the city right now. Walmart would be a classic example. We issued the permits for the Walmart transaction. We will issue permits for next door should that deal come to fruition. We will issue permits for any other body that comes in and builds on city property. So the question you're asking, can the city fairly issue a permit when we have a vested interest in it? I believe the answer to that question is yes.
I guess it just seems a little bit more tricky to me when we're dealing with environment. I realize there was an environmental dump there, but it's flat land. It's not quite as, I'm sure there's somebody that would disagree with me on this, but generally, as a general citizen, you look at that and you're like, okay, flat land, you know, you can see building something there. Whereas you start looking at, you know, shoreline master plan, you know, the thing that you, the lake there is.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm not saying anybody can't do that. I just want to protect ourselves to make sure that the perception is right. And I'm sure it is. It's just something that I just want to be aware of as we move forward.
The public is protected through the appeal process, Councilman. Should the city make a determination, the public or anyone is able to appeal that decision to a different body. So whether it goes to the Superior Court, or a hearing examiner, or whatever that process might be, that's the protection against what you're discussing.
Do they have to have a conditional use permit?
For this, no.
Yes. No, okay. I didn't know if it went already, though.
Okay.
I think that's it for right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. So, Mr. Sachs, when we first started hearing this proposal, I guess there was three major things that stood out to me as concerns. One was the 30-year lease term. One was the city putting up money, up front to get this going. And the other was how we restore the park back to its original condition. It looks like two of those have been handled with the fact that the city's not putting up money and there's a bond we talked about. I guess my concern is, to echo off of what Councilman Stein was talking about, is the lease extension terms and making sure that it's not that there's something in it for the city. So, for instance, if we're into the 11th year of this lease and we're still only receiving $24,000 a year, or let's say $26,000 a year, that doesn't seem like that's very financially feasible. You know, that's not the carrot that's been dangled out in front of us, so to speak. And so I'm going to be interested in seeing something that gives us some form of assurances that we are going to either be seeing the revenue that's been promised or at least anticipated, and that's a condition of extending the lease. That would be something that would make me feel a lot better. I'm thrilled about moving from 30 years down to 10, but it doesn't sound like if it's just the decision of H3O to extend it, then we've really only gone from 30 down to 25. And 25 is still, that's a long time. So that's definitely something I'm concerned about. Hopefully there's something that gives the city a little bit of the
negotiating power on the back end of that.
So an escalator clause of some sort, at the end of 10 years, it might, the monthly rent might bump, or it might go from 2% to 2.5%, or
something that you know, because again, you know, right now it's the honeymoon period, and people are saying, here's the projected numbers of this thing, and it's going to be, I mean, I've heard numbers of, you know, $1.4 million or whatever, and that's all speculation. If it's $24,000 a year, that's not that much, and, you know, for the hassle and the effort and everything. So just something protecting the city to say, you know, yeah, this is, it's nice and it's up and it's running, but it really isn't that beneficial to the city after 10 years, and that it's not just H3O's decision whether or not they want to continue into the lease, that we have something tangible that we can hold them to.
And if I could, Councilman, could you maybe give us some insight as to what you would like to see at the end of 10 years? Because we do have to go back, approach H3O, and
well, I believe there were some revenue projections that were put out there.
Okay.
And so just that we're in line with those projections,
okay,
to some degree.
Okay.
And that we're not just, you know, sitting here and it's a $26,000 a year revenue stream.
Gotcha.
So that's something. Then the other concern I have is the rent being tied to their gross revenues and making sure that that's something that's easy for the city to obtain that information and to audit, and that there are some stiff penalties if that information is not given to us in a timely manner. We're dealing with that right now, you know, in some ways, and I would hope that it's not something that we have to every month look at, but whether it can be tied to an annual tax return or something, but if that information isn't supplied in a timely manner, then there's some financial penalties associated with not providing that information. I would feel more comfortable with that as well. And then my last question is, do we have an estimate, even a very rough estimate, on what the value of that building is going to be built and deeded back to the city?
Roughly $350,000 to $400,000. The tower structures, I believe, are about $400,000. And you might ask if Greg Dick could respond to that. He might have better numbers for you.
I'm not as concerned with the towers, because if for whatever reason they default and go away, the towers would be gone, we'd be left with a building. I'm just trying to estimate, you know, what type of asset did the city just get from this. So
I would imagine that it's going to be the $300,000 to $400,000 range for the permitting, the CEPA checklist, the survey, and, you know, everything, plus the building being constructed.
Okay. Thank you.
I know this is stepping back quite a way to see the lights on. If I might ask Mr. Sachs and Mr. Fowler to provide a little bit of history with regards to the property itself, this development, for our new council members who are in Councilmember-elect who's in the audience this evening as well, and one who's familiar, one who's not, history of the lake time.
As far as mitigation payments, how
just takes back to the beginning of Lake Tide, its inception, its creation, how, what, who developed, paid, things like that. Just the process to where we're at today, because I know there's a lot of concern with the costs that the city have incurred in developing Lake Tide and the parks, and for some members of the community, I think those costs. There's a misunderstanding of what those costs are as to the realities. So, you don't want to be dumb. A little history on the lake itself.
You've been here, but
I can do a vague history. If you like more detail, I can come back on January 3rd with that, so they don't know all the numbers and things like that. Basically, there was a requirement of the plat of Fryland's. Actually, there was, I think, six plats, industrial park, and then five divisions of the residential area. And as part of the conditions of that development was that they donate some park property to the city of Monroe. The majority of the property they donated also became the stormwater retention pond for the development. So that money would, that property was received from the developer as part of the platting process. Those tracts were platted to the city. There was no direct mitigation payment as such of dollars. There was land instead of dollars. So and then over the years, the city has used money that has come from other park mitigation fees from other developments to develop the park and put in the trail, the path, the gazebos, restrooms, and things like that.
So typical of a new construction, there's a park impact fee that is part of the construction. In this case, those impact fees were not paid correctly.
Impact fees started after that plat had been done. During that time, it was a CEPA process where, as Mr. Sachs mentioned, the environmental impact statement, they came up with a mitigation, and part of the mitigation was the donation of land for a park.
So the costs associated with helping to develop that park were really from the mitigation fees that were collected as a whole from the city, not specific to that one plat or any plats of the Fry Islands that were
correct. Yeah, along with probably some rent money, which also went to that.
Okay, so for council members, just to understand, I just wanted to be sure that you understood this project or the lake itself is actually a byproduct of the development, not the direct result of the city investing in the creation of the lake itself, only the upgrading of the trails around and some of the park areas, which is no small feat, but still, I think important to understand. So, Councilmember Scott.
Thank you, Mayor. Was there anything in here, I didn't see anything on parking, that was kind of a issue that people had going into this? Is that going to be addressed later on? Probably?
That will be addressed through the permit process.
Also, I won't be here to worry about it, but moving forward, I would just give a word of caution, I guess, not move forward, but as far as making sure that we get that figured out, just in case somebody does a catastrophic accident there, and there's, you know, heaven forbid something would happen, but over the course of a 25-year period of time, you have people involved in active sports like this. Hopefully nothing will ever happen, but the chances are it could happen. So making sure that they have deep enough, not only that they'll take the what is their responsibility, but also that they have an insurance policy enough to cover us so that we don't end up getting sued as a city with opening ourselves up for a big liability with that. Maybe I'm just overly cautious or worried, but I'm not saying it can't be done, but I just want to make sure that we don't open ourselves up for something else. The money that we make from the lease, even though that would be great, that's not really the reason for my moving forward in this. It's to give us more activity, to go more from passive uses to more active uses. And anytime you change any type of use, whatever the property may be, there's always going to be some getting used to it. And those are what I have right now. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Pittman.
Thank you. Bear with me, I'm a little under the weather, so my voice gives out. I've got a sore throat. Jeff, I just have a couple questions. I'm a little bit concerned about, I know you're not asking for the resolution to be passed tonight, but I'm a little bit concerned about passing a resolution that then kind of dictates the contract. If these basic terms and conditions, those would just then be incorporated into the contract. Is that my understanding?
That's correct.
Okay. So I do have a little bit of issue with that as we move forward in negotiating a contract. We've already set in stone, some of these very important doesn't seem to be in the best interest of the city, to be honest. My second question is, or statement question, what if SEPA can't be met or they determine that we have to do an EIS, which is pretty expensive? By passing this resolution, are we on the hook for any part of that?
No. That would be a business decision by H3O at that point to either move forward with the project and continue through to try to overcome whatever hurdles might be identified, or make the decision to discontinue their application and move on to another site. So the contract is envisioned that should the permit process identify a roadblock that can't be overcome, that the parties will agree to separate and we will move forward.
My third question has to do with insurance. And I know this hasn't worked out the details of insurance or risk allocation, which I think is going to be a fairly big issue. Have we contacted our insurance carrier to look at what the increases to us would be as a city, and are we passing those costs off to H3O?
That will be part of the agreement. We will present the contract or the lease agreement to our insurance provider, WCIA, and they will review the document for insurance purposes. We had not anticipated an increase in our insurance rates. I think if we see an increase in our insurance rates, that's an issue that has to be addressed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that for sure. It's a possibility. You mentioned about the bond for removal. Is that a bond that H3O would be taking out?
That's correct.
And it would be there until the contract is expired?
That's correct.
And how are you basing the bond on an estimate of what you think the removal would cost?
Correct. And we'll have to determine what the value of that bond should be. I think that will be developed through the permit process when we find out what the cost of installation is. I think we can pretty well extrapolate what the cost of removal will be. So the bond will cover those costs, hopefully to exceed whatever.
Right, because I would see those costs maybe increasing as time goes on.
That's correct.
So that's something to make sure that if we proceed in this manner, that we prepare for that. I think it's my last question, but I've talked to you about, I have some concerns about the 2% of the gross revenue. I would rather see, if we do move in this direction, that it's net profits, not gross revenue. We, again, don't have any control over their expenses or salaries, whatnot, so I think doing gross revenue is an issue for me. And then I have a little bit of an issue with the offset being capped at $45,000. Council members up here addressed concern about us laying out $100,000 to pay for the sewer and the water hookup, all that. In essence, we are paying for it. We're just not laying it out. We're just, starting our percentage after the $45,000, so they're going to make that money back. So basically, we are paying for it. We're just not laying the money out. That appears to be what it's saying here.
And that's correct. You're not misreading that.
Okay.
The one thing I did want to talk about, though, is the gross revenue. Labor expenses would not be subtracted from the gross revenue. Operational expenses would not be subtracted from gross revenue. Gross revenue is gross revenue.
I'm sorry. Thank you for correcting me. So we're doing it on the gross revenue, not the net profits.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Originally, I think it was on the net profits.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. My last question had something what Councilman Steina talked about with, us being a part owner of this land and continuing to be an owner, not selling the land, and for us to be, applying for the permitting process along with H3O and then us doing the review of these permits. To me, that seems a delicate situation. I mean, it's dissimilar to me, for example, with the Walmart deal, because our intent is to pass ownership fully over to Walmart to sell that property. We are going to continue to own Lake Tai. We are continue to be an owner in it. So I see those a little bit differently, and I guess I would want to make sure that question is covered.
And keep in mind, every structure you see built on city property has gone through the same permit process that H3O will go through. So the restrooms at Lake Tahoe were permitted through the city.
But not involving a private for company.
Not involving a private for-profit company, that's
right.
Correct.
The theaters were.
The theater would be a classic example of a public-private partnership, if you will. We leased that property. We issued the permits. We have a vested interest in assuring that they continue to show films there. So when we issued permits to the theater, very similar. So I believe government is established firewalls to allow for public officials to make decisions, and that's why we do have appeal processes. If there something untoward was to happen, somebody can appeal that decision and allow an external arbiter to determine whether or not it was done properly.
Sorry, I have one more question.
Yeah.
I thinking I had last question, but I was incorrect, as usual. So, now I lost my train of thought. Here we are.
You looked
at me.
I didn't even look.
Let's look at it from perspective, I guess. We've been working on this project since we did the RFP last summer. We asked for applications. We reviewed the sole application. We then, council, accepted that application, directed staff to move forward with analysis and presentation. We did that. We reviewed their application. Council then directed us to negotiate a permit or an agreement with H3O. To present back to council, and now this is the first fruits of that direction from council. So I guess it's a matter of perspective. If council didn't want to move forward with the cable park, we wouldn't be here today. The direction from council has been to proceed in negotiations with H3O. So depending on if you're a proponent or opponent, you might ask the question, has this been too rushed or has this been a deliberative process? So the answer to the question is the resolution, while I don't have years and years of experience with the city, whether this specific vehicle has been used, but the city attorney has recommended that this would be the next best step in allowing the project to move forward in a timeline that fits the needs of the business, H3O, and their desire to open in July of next year, 2012. And let us continue to work through the process, give them certainty that we're not going to yank the rug out from underneath them. So yes, your concern in that we are binding ourselves is accurate, because this will be a document that the City Council adopts and gives a certain right to H3O to move forward with some certainty. Maybe, and Brad just gave me a note, and think of it as a letter of intent that we signed with NextCorp in anticipation of receiving a purchase and sale agreement. So I think that's really a good example or a good analogy as to what this resolution is.
Sachs, going back to what Councilmember Williams said about having the option to see if we don't like the numbers, you know, back out and not continue to extend the lease. The other concern that I thought of was, again, this is kind of a new thing for this area, obviously, but say we don't like the crowd that this is bringing or just the whole atmosphere that's down there. So I would be interested to see if in the agreement here, not only looking at the numbers, but also looking at, for the city, is this really what we want? just so we have that option.
So in other words, if I may,
you bet.
If the business becomes a nuisance, as defined by criminal activity or something of that nature, the city could revoke the extension of the agreement.
Exactly.
I guess it would be similar to the skateboard park, where if the city felt that the skateboard park was too unruly, that too much. Drug activity or something. I'm not saying there is, but like an example, the city can close down the skateboard park. So I think if there's something in that, in those terms, it would behoove the applicant to ensure that the people are following the rules and that they're not allowing an activity to happen, that there is some form of self-policing in terms of the business environment. So.
That's exactly what I was going.
And to a certain degree, that I think the applicant, if I could just speak for them for a minute, from a business perspective, is businesses like certainty. And this council, over the next 10 years, is uncertain. Term limits are in place. And elections happen. Okay. Second reading of term limits are coming. But how's that? What I'm saying is the business would like to political proof their business agreement with the city. And if 4 years down the road, 6 years down the road, 15 years down the road, a council comes in that's absolutely opposed to what they're doing, the only thing they have to hold on to is that lease document and the security that that lease provides to them as a business. So I completely understand your desire to make sure that they're a good neighbor to the community. Writing that language into a lease could become problematic from a business perspective. Would their investors, would their insurance company like to see a lease that could be pulled out from under the rug because of something we put in the lease contract? And that becomes subjective unless we define it very accurately within the lease document. So I can see a 10-year trigger that might review the operation of the business from a financial standpoint, and I don't know how to review the social aspect. I would love to, or the society impact. I would love to hear some thoughts on that.
Sure. The only reason I asked that is, like, you say we're going to bring a roller skating rink to the city. Well, many of us have gone to roller skating rinks. We know what that experience is like, maybe what kind of crowds are there. Not so with this. Heard of it until their name was brought up, so I'm just glad we're here.
Okay, thank you, Councilor Ball.
Thank you. Without term limits, in the last 12 years, I've served in 23 different council members in 3 different bands. So that's a comment about the need of term limits more than anything, in my opinion. So, but the more important thing for a 10-year lease is that he's investing money, and he needs to have a lease that has a minimum limit so that he has a reasonable expectation to have a reasonable return on his investment. And that is the most compelling reason for him to have a lease. But that doesn't mean that needs to be forever. What we need to determine what is the minimum amount he needs the company they need to ensure that they can secure the financing they need with this project. I do have some concerns about 3-5 years extensions. So I understand the need of the lease. The question is to see the minimum amount they need. In their proposals, have they identified the size of the building yet?
2,500 square feet.
And then the other things that have you mentioned, I just want to make sure, is that the footprint of their need has not been defined, at least by legal terms as far as surveying. Is that correct? And that another issue that has not been resolved is the sharing of risk. And also, they are seeking us to share the cost of the application permit process with us?
Yes.
Well, you have made the comment just a few moments, and all this has cost money. And you made the comment a few moments ago, the letter of intent is the same as a resolution. This is a lease that we're negotiating, and we're still in negotiation. And it's been my experience on the 12 years I've been on this council is that in those negotiations, those things are in executive sessions for a reason. One, we want to see where we stand individually and then through that discussion collectively so that it is felt, my understanding, that we are in a strong position when we mull over, think privately. I think individuals understand that. You don't want to have a discussion with your in front of someone you're selling something with, your wife, about what's the bottom line. You rather do that privately than come out publicly. So I had real concern having this resolution come out before the council had private discussions of what, one, at these terms, I'm not having a common pro con on individual terms, whether or not this is where we want to be at this point of negotiations and where we would like to be tougher or weaker on which points. So I would say that before this comes before the council, that there should be an executive session. And we have had many executive sessions and came out of that with letters of intent. Staff has provided us with letters of intent, with outlines, where the negotiations are at that time. And council has deliberated and given their comments and made amendments and come out and either endorsed that wholeheartedly or, as you may imagine, amended or said, you know what, and made so much amendments, we're not ready to pass it. I think the council, the city as a whole, would be better served to have those deliberations in private before deciding on whether it's a letter of intent or resolution. Either vehicle has legitimacy. I understand the need for them to understand that negotiations has the backing of the council. So, and staff needs to know that they know that they are not too far out of bounds of where council's intentions are. So I mentioned that at this time. I don't have any more time to do it. So the other issue is that I think is an important one that has not been addressed. They're asking for $45,000 credit, which concerns me. I raised this issue before. It's my last time, so forgive me for regurgitating. I've had experience of being on creating organizations that made loans to business and being the chair of the loan committee. Did that for 5 years. Been on the boards of directors of economic revitalization. And there's three points that I think are important before we go down this line. It's a controversial issue. It's not the first time we have controversial issues, nor the last time. But before we go through that painful process, and it's a natural process, I always say any decision I make, 20% of the people are going to hate it, 20% of the people are going to love it. I could be handing out $5 bills on the corner, some people are going to be upset it's not a $10 bill. Everything we do is controversial. Is before we go through this controversial moment in this city, is that three questions I have that have not been answered. Is their business plan coherent? Does it make sense? Would it pass a loan officer at a bank? Would it pass a small business association loan requirements? So that you know that what's coming before you is the numbers are their best estimates, their best research, but at least it holds together and makes sense. And I realize that, personally, that those numbers are sometimes are not the ideal numbers or the perfect ones, but it's the best they have, and you at least can have a sense that they have an understanding what is needed for their business to be successful. I think that's the minimum we should be able to see. Do we have the finance to carry it out? Do we go down through this painful process and find out that they don't have the process? The financial backing, the security to carry it out? Before we go through those painful process, whether you're for or against it, we should know that we are entering an agreement that can be carried out for those 10 years, that we have confidence in that. And then the third question Does the man have the capacity as businessmen to carry this out? And when I look at those numbers that they previously shared with us, that means that that's a serious question. So I think before we go further, that they should be able to show us that these are businessmen who have a business plan that makes sense. You add up the numbers, they make sense, they're reasonable assumptions. And that's all they will be, is reasonable assumptions. Are there any numbers in there that are unreasonable that you can question? Do they have the financial backing that you know, and it's documented they have the financial backing to carry from the beginning to the end? And then, do they have the capacity within themselves to carry it out? They have the financial backing. They have a business plan that makes sense. Because if we're going to go forward, one, it's going to be, it's controversial. You all know that. Two, we don't want to repossess this in 5 years. Think about Dowsey Theater. I've been on the council for 12 years. I started in about 2000. I think the lease was signed in 98. And Dowsey Theater was in front of us in the year 2000 because their business plan was not quite there. So anyway, those are my thoughts. It's the last time we're together. Thank you.
Basically, in essence, what we're doing, Jeff, is that we're voting on a contract that has not been completed. Right? We're voting on a resolution that says, get it done.
I think you're taking a few liberties, but yes, we are moving forward with in partnership with H3O to successfully build a cable park.
I guess my concern is that, I mean, I know I've only been here all 2 seconds or 2 minutes, but we've already seen a couple different contracts, and it just seems a little backwards to me. So maybe we can. It just seems a little different than the two that I've already seen. So, all right.
Any other questions or comments, directions for Jeff?
Congratulate those who are leaving the council. They'll have a free Tuesday night, and unlike the rest of us. And I'll start with you, Tony. You've been here for almost all of your 12 years. I've only been here about 9 and a half, but I consider you a very learned council person. Don't agree on everything. There are a few things we agree on.
I don't agree with my life law on everything.
I will put it this way. When it got down to what was best for the city, you always cast your vote for what was best for the city. And from the police department's perspective, we certainly appreciate that. I want to give you a chief's coin here. Started a little bit off on the wrong foot. But I will tell you that it seems like we have every weekly a Tuesday meeting in my office, which I've grown to enjoy. And we've had discussions, we've talked about everything you can imagine, and not only do I appreciate your time on the council, and you've been a good friend to the police department, but I also consider you a personal friend. Anybody that can lick my pocket for a donation to the women's shelter is, I have to consider good friends. Anybody, but we're going to the Monroe Police Officers Guild contract.
It's less than $25.
The city and the Monroe Police Officers Guild will participate in collective bargaining negotiations and have a tentative agreement for a 3-year contract pending the City Council approval. The Guild has agreed to move their members to a new health plan. A high deductible medical plan with a health savings account as requested by the city, and they also, the guild has agreed to not receive a pay raise or cost of living adjustment in 2012 and agreed to restructure any future pay increases. I think it's a very reasonable contract. We've gone over the very important issues in the contract. There are many, a number of issues that were, we just rolled over into this new contract and used the old contract language. But the important thing, of course, as you well know, is the salary increases for the future will be tied to the city's increase in sales tax. And which is a first in this community and one of the first in the state of Washington, which definitely addresses a structural deficit that the city, and not only our city, but most cities have encountered for quite some time now. So I'm asking a vote to authorize the mayor to sign the police guild contract.
Councilor
Stanley? Yes. I wanted to say thank you to the police chief for his work in helping this get through and everybody who worked hard with this. And I'd also like to say thank you to the police guild. They have, from what I can tell, made this a very helpful process. It's been a privilege to work with them, and they have been very forward-looking in their agreements, and I think it's wonderful that tonight, I'm going to make the motion here in a second, but that there's a good working relationship between City Hall and the Police Guild, and you know, that has to do with the leadership of the Guild and others, and we're just really, I'm just really tickled at how this was done, and it was done without having to face each other down and, you know, before some person that doesn't have any clue, you know, as far as the relationship goes. And so I'm going to make the motion that we accept the guild proposal and move forward from there.
Actually, if you would make a motion to authorize the mayor to sign the police guild contract.
I will do that.
Second.
Make a motion to authorize the mayor to sign the police guild contract.
All right. Motion is made by Councilmember Steinman, seconded three times by Councilmember Morgan. Only twice.
Oh,
okay. All right. Any further comments or discussion? going to look to council members now at this time for council member reports, but I'm going to go a little differently because I want to allow for two of our council members to have the last word this evening. And, before they do, I'm going to step in and just say thank you to the two of you for many years of service that you've given to the city, for the many nights that you've spent in deliberation, discussion, and sometimes colorful discussion. Councilor Falk and I have served together now in some form of veterans for 6 years. And as you said, we don't always get along, or not along. We don't always get along. We don't always get agreed. But I have on many occasions appreciated your insight, understanding, and recommendations. So thank you very much for your group. And Councilor Steiner, to you as well. Appreciate what you've done in serving the community and our people of this town can be grateful for what the two of you have done in the last few years. With that said, Councilmember reports. We'll start with Councilmember Geary.
I'd very just like to say thank you to Councilmember Ball and Councilmember Steiner for your service. Thank you.
Councilmember Bebeck.
I would like to echo those comments. Councilman Stein, it's been a real pleasure. I've gotten to know you probably even better over the last 6 months, and I really appreciate you coming to council with questions and taking the time to do the work that is required. I know it's a lot, so I really appreciate you being on council, and I'm going to miss you, actually. So thanks for your service. I know that sounded bad. Councilman Stein, I'm going to miss you. Councilman Ball, served with you the last 2 years. I've really appreciated your comments, insight. I've learned a lot from you over the 2 years, and my hope is that you will stay involved in city business and continue to give us your insight, comments, just from a different place. So it's been 12 years. That's amazing in this city. I don't think too many people have done that, maybe two or three, maybe the third. But I've always appreciated your comments, so thank you so much.
Councilor Williams? Yeah, first I'd like to say thank you for allowing my last 2 weeks' absence, but we welcomed the new baby last Wednesday, so I was calm for that. So, and then next, I would also like to echo the sentiments that you said with both Councilman Steinman and Councilman Ball. You know, we don't always agree as a group up here. We agree much more often than we don't, but we still don't always agree. But one thing I always defend is the ethical behavior and the passion and the desire to do what's right for the city from everyone that I've served with so far, and I firmly believe that. I look forward to both of you, as Councilman Bebeck said, coming and maybe speaking on a different side of the podium, and look forward to being able to meet you both in 5 minutes. And John, you know, I consider you a friend, and I've enjoyed working with you. And Councilman Balk, on paper, you and I should not get along, and I consider you a friend, and I'm going to miss you as well. So thank you both.
Sometimes I'm a lot more than I am.
Councilman Gamble.
I just wanted to thank both of you gentlemen for your service, and also for making me feel so welcome, stepping in. Coming up and saying any questions, process, procedure, all that, and then just the office. It was very nice. So thank you for your service.
Councilor Gamble.
Same way, I echo what Councilor Gamble said. You both made me feel very welcome, and we definitely appreciate your service to not just to the city, but to the city council, but also to the city in different areas that you serve as well.
Thank you. Nor really like me. Anyway, no, I mean, they really like me. No, I know. You know, I would just say that one of the things that I think that's important in a council that does change, obviously, over time, is trust. The last 2 years, I feel as though there's really been a sense of trust between council and that's it's been very, very rewarding for me, because when I came on council, maybe it's just that I've learned some things, but things were a little on the dysfunctional side, and wherever that, you know, needed to be attached to the street, but I think everybody was doing what they thought was best, but I do appreciate that, especially the last 2 years, that we've been able to have a real, as each council, every 2 years, there's just kind of a new council. Of course, with us, we get two new guys for 3 weeks, and, you know, I mean, it's a new council every month or two, but anyway, it's been a pleasure to be here. We have wonderful staff here, and I think that I would just say that even when things don't seem to add up to us, that we always trust one another, give each other the benefit of the doubt until it's obvious that something has gone askew. And, because one thing I've learned over the 4 years is that relationships are very important. And relationships between staff and council, obviously without giving direction, I understand that, but it's important that we have those things, and that it is a privilege to serve the citizens. And so I will at some point miss being here, and but for right now, and it has been a privilege to serve with Tony and with everyone, and I trust everyone will, you guys will do fine, and we'll let somebody else make the big decisions, and this will be good. So thank you very much.
Well, it's crazy. I've been checking my pulse to see if I was still alive. Not too long ago. Well, the great sincerity I see, thank you. It's been an honor to serve with every one of you and all the 23 council members and 3 mayors I've served with. I had no doubt that everyone who I've served with had the best intention for the city. Staff, thank you for putting up with me. I know that sometimes I've been trying, but have no doubt that was always for the best of this city. I knew when I came here that being on city council, don't get many thanks, so I really appreciate tonight. But the thanks for me was knowing that I was serving my community, helping it to grow, but also knowing that I would grow with all the interaction with staff, with my fellow council members, and know that that was my reciprocal relationship, that I would grow as a person, and it has exceeded my expectations. So I thank you all. My only regret tonight that when we were doing roll call, I was going to say out to lunch instead of present. I forgot. Old habits die hard. So again, thank you all for everything.
All right. We'll move on to staff. Any additional staff reports tonight? We'll start with Mike.
Yeah, actually, I do have a little brief thing. Monday, I submitted on behalf of, well, the collaboration between the school district and city, a grant application to that new Snohomish County Tourism Promotion Area fund that council approved. So it's pretty exciting. And what the grant application is for is the, we've talked about this before, I know the mayor mentioned it in the past, that staff from the city and school district, we're looking and collaborating in the goal of developing all-weather fields at the high school, which would have that school park concept that we have the interlocal agreement, just bringing another example of that. So that where it would benefit the school district in their serving their needs, but then also outside of school hours and sports and that sort of thing is serve the community as well. For local youth leagues, tournaments, and also these events that put heads in beds as that grant application is looking for. So I think it's a good grant application. I'm really excited that we're hitting that from the get-go. So.
Jeff?
The adventure starts here. Yesterday, the mayor and I were able to meet with Tom Teagan with County Parks and Wendy Becker, the economic development person at the county, until they actually hire somebody. And we also met with the I'm not sure, is it the producer the organizer for the last 14 Winter X Games competitions and the last 8 Summer X Games competitions, and they've come to Monroe, and specifically the cable park drew them to Monroe to come look at a different type of facility. They're looking at the fairgrounds for the parking potential. What they're looking for is a community that will accept X Games in their demographic warmly into their community so that they can come and invest capital infrastructure into the city to bring events and build on their events over the years. They're very intrigued with the concept of the fairgrounds using the entire Sky Valley as a recreational area, everywhere from, you know, anything motorized to anything human-powered. They're really into that type of thing. Specifically, we went down and looked at the Nordstrom property, or now the Remlinger property south of town along the river, and with an interest in bringing the Warrior Dash to the city of Monroe, possibly this summer. And the synergies are very cool in the people in our community that once they got here, they realized that they knew a lot of other people in the community that they just hadn't met yet. A very common interest. So that was very exciting for the city of Monroe. We're going to nurture that relationship, and we'll keep you posted.
Before you, I put a spreadsheet of the sales tax numbers. I finally got an update early this month for the December revenue. Everyone's always interested in what the sales tax is for the year. And so you can see we're just a hair under budget. As Brad pointed out, pretty darn good considering we lost one of our car dealerships this year. You know, we would have been over budget if they had stayed in business. And so the percentages that you see next to each month, that's the percentage of the total years that that month brought in. So you can see where in the second column that says December sales received in February, that's all the Christmas shopping. That those percentages are higher than any other months. They run around 10%. And the rest run around 8 or 7%. So just, I know everyone's always interested in sales tax, so we've got the numbers, latest and greatest.
In case you haven't noticed, the new website's up. And so if you have any comments, let me know. And I will be here with a camera on the 3rd of January to take pictures of the new council members and the old ones if you'd like to update your photos. Right, it would be nice to have them all like look alike. So, yeah, that's all I have.
Good. City Administrator Brad.
Thank you, Mayor. I too would like to thank Councilmember Balk and Councilmember Stout for your years of service. It's been a pleasure and the opportunity to work with you both in the city administrator capacity and the public works director. And it was excellent. I sure appreciate it. And I wanted to thank the council as a whole for another amazing year. I told staff this past week during the one of our monthly staff meetings that we have at City Hall that I've never been prouder to work somewhere. The staff and council working together. We've met many challenges this year, and as I go to the city manager administrators meeting once a month, you know, I was there again today, I noticed the talk of the Snohomish County. I mean, we've got everybody looking at us. We're ahead of the curve on many things. We passed our budget ahead of a lot of cities. We're just doing really good things, and I appreciate the cooperative effort that each and every one of you have joined in. So, anyway, I look forward to 2012. As we look at January 3rd, 2012, under announcements and presentations, we have the oath of office. We have Judge Lyons come to do that for us. And then we have council member training being put on by WCIA. Lisa Roberts will be here to do that. Under the consent agenda, we have the minutes and accounts payable and payroll. Final action, we have a placeholder for H3O cable park proposal. It's tentative at this point in time. Then we have the ordinance adopting term limits, second and final reading. We also have a contract extension for the IT employee that we have here. We have a contract with Denal, and that ended or will end in December, so that'll have to come back before council, and we anticipate having that next week for you. And that's it. We have the draft agenda for January 10th. Additions or deletions?
I said my piece of that. I had 12 years to do it. I haven't spent by now.
You have.
So moved.
Second.
Very good. And the motion has been made by Councilmember Ball, and seconded by Councilor Steinma. With gratitude to all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Gratitude to the motion.
I'm trying to save money.